Welcome back to CSU Student News. I'm your host, Jonah Albert, and for this episode, our students have been exploring the impacts that COVID-19 has had on jobs, mental health, and businesses and events, while other students are taking our minds off these issues by reporting on other current events and having podcast discussions with their friends. The first news piece is from Xanthi Gregory, where she talks about the issues many Australians are facing going into a more flexible job structure while being forced to work from home.
With more Australians forced to work from home than ever before, business and urban researchers are calling into question the functionality of our major cities. It's expected the world's largest work-from-home experiment will encourage more people to make the transition into a flexible job structure, even once COVID-19 restrictions have passed. John Hopkins is a business lecturer at Swinburne University of Technology. He says working remotely was a trend already on the rise before coronavirus, but Australian cities are designed around workers commuting.
With roads or with public transport, they're actually designed around numbers of people travelling into the city increasing. So if all of a sudden the numbers decrease, you have to reassess what projects need to be done.
Dr. Hopkins says the national broadband network was not designed for such a large increase in usage. Data from Aussie Broadband shows evening peak use has increased by 25% during the shutdown.
Same with the energy networks and telecoms. They're designed around a lot of people being in the city and the heavy usage being there. But if less people are working in the city on a more regular basis, then there will be investment required for those networks outside of the cities and in the suburban areas and in the rural areas.
He says living and working from home in rural areas may become a much more viable option. But that will only be the case if a significant amount of money put aside for road and transport projects is redirected towards telecommunications and energy.
Governments have wanted decentralisation for a long time, but they've found it a challenge. But as people are able to have more flexibility in terms of where they can work from and they're not dependent on having to travel into a city because that's where the only place they can perform their job, there's certainly more flexibility in terms of where they can live as well. And that will be a really good way of addressing the crisis we've got in terms of housing affordability.
Xanthi Gregory, 2MCE.
In this next piece, Ruben Spargo talks about how isolation is having an impact on many Australians' mental health, and as a result, the crisis support organisation known as Lifeline is experiencing an increase in the number of callers.
Australia has been through a heck of a lot lately. We went from devastating drought to fire to COVID-19 all in the space of months. And when we turn on the TV of an evening, we are faced with the physical and economic fallout. We're presented with statistics and projections, often shaping policy and attitudes. But what is harder to measure and predict is the state of the country's mental health, a factor which deserves as loud of a voice as the physical and economic fallout. Lifeline has seen a rise in calls in recent times. In speaking with them, I learned that in fact from the previous normal prior to December 1st, calls had risen 10% due to the bushfires and never reverted back. Then, COVID-19 had lifted the new normal to 25% above the pre-December average. Good Friday of this year saw Lifeline's busiest ever day with 3,197 calls, one caller every 30 seconds. Saturday is always Lifeline's busiest day, and many feared the impacts of an isolated Anzac Day, remembering the already disproportionate suicide rates of veterans. However, they avoided the spike they feared. Anzac Day saw the DIY commemoration, as many Australians stood at the end of their driveways with flags, candles, rosemary, and trumpets. Did these local suburban gestures of support save lives? Images of solidarity shouldn't be underestimated for the impact they can have on another's life. The rise in recent times of Lifeline calls is a sign of the distressing times, but it's without a doubt great that people are calling. If you or anyone else needs to chat, you can reach Lifeline's 24-hour telephone crisis line on 13 11 14.
Edward Dodds brings us this next piece and talks about how Zumba is keeping up with the fitness industry and is now offering online classes for those who want to keep active in isolation.
Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, many industries have had to adapt. one being the fitness industry, which are now offering online classes. I spoke with Jane Versace, a local resident of the Terrigal district.
So first off, who in your area is running these classes?
The teachers that I've had for the last 5 years, 6 years, from our women's health club called Curves. And so they have set up our classes that we usually have all together locally.
On average, how many people do you have attend these classes?
Oh, we can have 30 or 40.
And do you find these Zumba classes better than, say, your average workout of walking outside?
Well, it's an added thing, really. I love my outdoor exercise, so I walk on the beach every other day as well. So I mix it up. But this is actually probably mentally and physically one of the better classes to do.
So if you're looking for a new workout routine, maybe online Zumba is for you.
For this next piece, Matthew Kappos talks to McGregor Ross, the founder of the Iron Fist Festival, about how he intends to operate the event in an online environment due to COVID-19.
Welcome to Iron Fist, online. Our virtual festival, enforced by nature and law.
In case you haven't worked it out yet, the theme of this year's Iron Fest was gothic. Yes, yes, we get it. Spooky. This year was set to be the 21st annual Iron Fest, held at the Lithgow Showground. However, as is currently the trend, COVID-19 has forced the event online. But what is Iron Fest? Founder McGregor Ross talked about the origins of the festival in an interview at last year's event.
What it is, it's a movement, if you like, of people who make their own things. I was working as an artist and I thought I needed to come up with something else. And I was thinking, well, instead of me travelling around to all these shows to exhibit my work, wouldn't it be nice if people came to me? And so that's what made me start the Iron Fest.
This year's virtual iteration of the event took place on the 18th and 19th of April on the Iron Fest in Lithgow, New South Wales Facebook page. A watch party was scheduled with videos of creators and entertainers curated and played over both days. A separate Facebook group allowed buyers and sellers who would normally attend the event in person to connect with each other. Mr. Ross discussed the unlikely success of Iron Fest, which usually draws up to 20,000 visitors to the Lithgow area.
It is a very hard place to make this sort of thing work in Lithgow. You know, there aren't a lot of people out this way who want to buy handmade products. They're mainly living in the city, but they've come to us.
In this upcoming piece, my friend Thomas and I sit down to have a discussion on how Americans are reacting to isolation laws and the resulting protests that are gathering large numbers of attendees. Since the middle of April, the United States of America has seen recent protests against the isolation laws in over 18 of their states. These protests are attracting numbers of attendees ranging from a few dozen in some states to a few thousand in others, such as Michigan. Today I'm joined by Thomas, and we're going to be talking about the type of people that we can see are attending these protests and the possible impact it will have on society and the rest of the world. So, from what I've seen of the protests, it's funny to note that the demographic of people that are attending them seem to be the ones with very controversial agendas, you know, such as the anti-vaxxers and the flat earth enthusiasts. And, you know, why do you think this is, Thomas?
It could be the education system in America. I was reading somewhere that it does kind of point the finger at America's education system because of the fact that it's not really happening anywhere else in the world. It's interesting to see the number of people doing it in America, where you would think that if it was such a major issue, it would be happening worldwide. And the people with the strange demographic, the conspiracy theorists, it could be ignorance or it could be willful ignorance, which is what we've seen, like, especially in the Flat Earth Society in the past. It's definitely interesting to see.
That's like a common theme with a lot of the
the agendas. They're very ignorant and very passionate about, you know, things like freedom and their beliefs. But one of the things that's very different about our country and America is our laws are kind of enforced by the law, whereas if you look at America, they're very loose about it. And pairing that with, you know, a civilization of people that are so passionate about their amendments and being free, it's just really a recipe for disaster. Well, thank you for the insight. It's interesting to see the comparison of how the US is reacting to these isolation laws with countries such as our own, and it seems that one of the outlying themes we've consistently drawn upon is the, you know, the American people's strong belief in their amendments and their freedom. But yeah, this was a good discussion, and hopefully it gives some people a new perspective on how these protests might be impactful on the US and the rest of the world. So thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
For a change of pace, this next piece by Madeline Riddell talks to us about the annual show that is the meteorite shower season.
It is meteor shower season here on Earth with the Eta Aquarids, a small group of meteors located within the solar system, performing their yearly routine passing by the planet. The debris of Halley's Comet were at peak visibility last Tuesday night, but if you missed the show, don't worry. The meteor shower started around April 19th and will be continuing until around May 28th, so there's plenty of time for folks to try and get a peek of the show later on in the month. According to early reports from articles on EarthSky, the meteor shower had to compete with a bright, nearly full moon, making visibility more difficult, especially if you live in a well-lit area. Due to current easing restrictions, there is difficulty for people to see the meteor shower this year, especially from the confines of a household backyard. If this is a problem for you, do not worry. A second lot of meteor showers called the Orionids will be passing by Earth during October. The Orionids are also debris of Halley's Comet. Although the comet is not set to pass by Earth until the early 2060s, the meteor showers caused by its debris are a yearly occurrence. Uniquely, the Eta Aquarids are said to favour the southern hemisphere, meaning those of us here in Australia get the front row seats to the yearly show.
For our last piece, Darcy Watt hosts a podcast with her friends that creates an open discussion about their behaviour on the social media platform Instagram.
Instagram. We love it, we hate it, we love to hate it. Wherever you sit on the fence, you or a large proportion of your friends probably have the app. I spoke with Blake Edward and Jamie Marie, two 20-something-year-olds who frequently use the app.
Are you like me, where you sometimes are on Facebook, then you catch yourself comparing yourself to others or thinking, oh, they haven't replied yet, and you're like, oh my God, this is why I feel the way I feel, but you ignore it and you keep using it?
Yeah, especially with Instagram. I find myself looking at various photos and thinking that that's not me, or thinking that someone doesn't have it as good, or, you know.
What sort of things do you do, Jamie?
I definitely do the same, and Instagram is probably the worst, where you look at all these models or influencers who look amazing, but their photos are probably edited anyway, but you just look at them and think, oh my God, she's amazing. I need to go get my lips done, or I need to go get lipo. And I actually will fully consider going getting something like that done purely because I saw someone on Instagram has it. And then I realize how stupid it is, but then I still want it done.
Lipo? Because of Instagram? So then if you see a correlation between you not feeling good about yourself, comparing yourself to what everybody else is doing on there or has, then would you ever consider deleting it? Like, why do you keep using it? Why do we, sorry?
I can't get enough of it. But because there's some, you know, there's some things on there that you will compare yourself to and get down about, but then there's a lot of other things on there that can be good to look at. You know, you can get inspiration for things.
Is this you justifying your addiction though?
Yeah, a little bit. I do spend the most time on Instagram, on social media, but it is the one that probably sends me crazy the most.
I definitely feel the same. Like, I follow a lot of artists that inspire me and I love looking at their artworks, but I have a separate art page for following those pages, and then I have my personal page for following my friends and these so-called influencers. And I have deleted it twice for that reason, that I feel like maybe sometimes it isn't a good thing the way it makes me feel. According to the Royal Society for Public Health in the UK, Instagram, along with Snapchat, ranked the worst for mental health in young people. Blake, you live with two people. How many of you in your house suffer from mental illness that you know of?
Myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the other two do, but it's not really spoken about between the three of us, but I'm sure they have things going on that they don't really talk about. And, you know, it's only occasionally that I'll mention something, but, like, I don't day-to-day be like, oh, I have mental health issues.
You said that you had an account for your art page.
Yeah.
Have you ever used it for something you shouldn't have used it for?
Yes. I blocked people on my personal account and then stalked them on my art account because I don't want them to have the satisfaction that I've unblocked them, but I can't help but stalk them.
Both Blake and Jamie admit to using the app for things they're not proud of. Even I have to put my hand up for that. But will our mental health always be impacted by Instagram? In order to answer that, we might need to delete the app first.
And that was it for this week's CSU Student News. I'm your host, Jonah Albert. Thank you for tuning in, and you're listening to 2MCE.
On the airwaves and in your ears since 1976, you're on 2MCE.
spend my days in conversation, please. Remember me, pass on my love. Don't forget me, pass on my dear. Hold your head up, you silly girl. Look what you've done. When you find yourself in the thick of it, help yourself to a better what is all around you. Silly girl, take a good look around. Singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly. Into the line of a dark black night. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly. Into the light of a dark black night. This moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Who knows how long I've loved you? Do you know I love you still? But it never really mattered. I will always
sing it loud so I can hear you. Make it easy to be near you for the things you do and dear you to me. Just to reach you, Julia. 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 Ocean child calls me. So I sing the song of love, Julia. Shimmering, glimmering in the sun. Julia, Julia, morning moon, touch me so I sing song of love, Julia. When I cannot sing my heart, I can only speak my mind, song of love, Julia.